various levels of language, the identities which they share together, it would be much more easy, or much more easily adapted to modern Western ways. We have to find answers to things that separate, and ignorance of the meaning of words is one of the great separating factors in civilization today. So we have to go after all such terms and also other terms. What is liberty? What is freedom? These are words that are bantered about. And yet, what is freedom? Freedom cannot be merely the right to do as you please. Freedom cannot be every individual living his own life in a civilized society. There has to be some understanding of the word freedom, what it really means. And of course, in the last analysis, it really means the right of the individual to be right. It is his possibility to be what he should be, and which he never or very seldom actually is what he should be. So we have liberty as the right of the person to be a decent citizen, the right to have a free understanding of the good in all things, the right to appreciate his neighbor, the right to go above differences to the great essential unities of life. If these things are not appreciated, then the words have failed to carry their message. So we have all over today all kinds of cliques and clans and sects. We have anarchists and activists all fighting really over the same thing, all actually missing the point. They're missing the real point of the whole thing being that truth makes peace, error makes war. If the individual understands the facts of his own faith correctly, he will discover that the faith is of all others. But if he becomes merely a bigot of his own, and intolerant of all that he does not believe to be true, then when he attacks the other person's belief, he is only attacking his own belief under a different name. All of these things come out in the study. Now we have new words all the time. Words usually are increased by various specialists and special phases of life. As various arts and sciences have become increasingly complicated, new words are continuously invented. Some of these inventions are trivial, some of them are really of no significance whatever, but gradually a language builds up to immense proportions. And as it grows greater and greater, it has a tendency to separate the various strata of civilization. By the time we add 10 or 20,000 highly specialized words to our vocabulary, we have lost contact with millions of human beings to whom these terms will never be familiar and will never be generally useful. It is therefore very important that we divide language as the Egyptians did. The Egyptians had two kinds of language. They had the language of the marketplace and they had the language of the temple. The sacerdotal languages were not communicated to the public. You couldn't buy and sell apples with the sacerdotal languages. They had their own argo, sufficient to the needs of commerce. But those higher terms of language were reserved for meaning that was exalted and was not going to be degraded by being tossed down to a group of persons who would never understand them. So that the languages are of two types. There is a language suitable to the physicist. There is a language that has a special meaning for the physician. There is a language that is particularly necessary in the courts of law. There are languages in laboratories and in research groups and in all kinds of trades and professions. But beside these, there has to be the common language. And that common language is simply the common usage of words for the purposes of living and the purposes of communication. We cannot communicate with specialists except in their own terms. And gradually they restrict their own interpretations until they subdivide into infinite numbers of groups. Yet behind it all, under it all, is the common language that we have to use for the needs of life. We have to say, I'm hungry, I'm tired. We have to say, I am old, I am young. And we have to use a whole world of common usage which should be kept as it is, primary and just. And no specialized language should contradict the general voice of the world. The specialized languages are for certain purposes, but no specialized language should be substituted for the basic language of our daily needs. Thus we may say that the place where the physicist and the homemaker meet will be in this common language, the common language of love, of friendship, of kindness, the common language of helpfulness, sympathy, remembrance. These things belong equally to all levels and constitute, together with the statement of needs, purposes, and basic ideals, state the basic convictions of mankind. This is one of the reasons why we have trouble today with between science and religion. We try to use scientific language to explain religion, and it won't work. We try to use religious languages to explain science, won't work. Each has its own level, but both meet in one common problem: home, life, children, and the faiths that are involved all come back finally to the love of truth, the love of God, the love of service, or the service of mankind, the dedication of a life or a skill to the greater good of the greater number. Well, these things are in common. They do not go into the laboratory. They are not seen through a telescope. But they are the basic factors of life. And one of the most important principles in connection with communication is to equip the young person starting out in life to face these great realities, the simple realities of life, realities that will have to survive even the collapse of great empires and various purposes and principles that we know about. We have to have a simple, natural, honest language. We have to use words that can be generally understood, and we must use them on purpose and not accidentally. And I think that 90% of our domestic difficulties would be improved, if not solved, simply by the use of the proper words. Words that are in common and in fact. Words that represent the highest type of conviction that we possess. In every country, ancient and modern, the principal foundation of international relationship has been on the religious level. It is on the level of faith, the level of veneration for good, of the Golden Rule and the Sermon on the Mount, that we have been able to find common ground for understanding and for patience and all the things necessary for daily living. Therefore, this type of language is fundamental. We should make greater use of it. We should not be lured into long words simply because they sound impressive. We should not be lured into all the adjectives and all the adverbs that come along. What we are looking for is a simple yea, yea, and a nay, nay. To do or not to do, that is the question. What we say, what we believe, what we think should be a straight statement of ourselves in the fewest possible words and in the shortest possible sentences. To get to near the facts, the more elaborate our discussion, the further we are from something. We never are able to cross the intervals as long as we allow excuse and elaborate interpretation. In the old days, when many people were very unhappy over the churches, many of the old churches were very much given to lengthy sermons. When the pews were solid wood without cushions, and most of them didn't even have a back, and the beagle was watching constantly, It was not easy to listen for 2.5 hours to a rather dry sermon by an uninspired preacher. It was just more than most people could endure. We've gradually gotten it down now to about a 15-minute sermon. This was always suitable, always proper, because it would not be the length but what was in it. A message that all one would understand could be given in 15 minutes. From that time on, you began to lose people. And by the time you got through with two hours of it, most of the meaning was lost. In the act, the minister himself didn't know what he was saying. These differences are being changed. But now we have 15-minute sermons. But unfortunately, they're not too vital either. Something is happening. The facts of life are being constantly obscured, accidentally or purposefully. We are doing everything possible to complicate our condition so that it will be more and more difficult to understand it. The danger being that if we understand it, we know we were wrong. If we understand it thoroughly, we wouldn't do it. But not understanding it thoroughly, we do it enthusiastically. We have forgotten that our ignorance is carefully concealed under an elaborate intellectualism that has nothing to do with common sense or with the realities of life. We are failing not in the fact that we're not getting that spaceship off the ground right at the moment due to combustion problems. We are not in trouble from those kind of causes. We are in trouble because on Earth here, we are not able to face facts. We have talked ourselves out of reality. We have made a complicated pattern with marvelous vocabulary, with new uses of old words and old meanings of new words. We've done everything possible to obscure the simple fact that we're in trouble. We know that the world is in trouble, but we can't face it that way. We can't do it as some middle European family would have done it 200 years ago, simply admit we were in trouble. Now there are all kinds of complications. There are promises, there are hopes, there are new projects, but it all sums up to a mass of words. And the mere mass of words cannot obscure the problem that we're in deep trouble. And this trouble is being intellectualized, dramatized, and vocalized so that we won't recognize it. But it's there just the same. And it's going to be there that we do something about it. So words will never do it. The thing that will have to be done is certain simple processes will have to be transformed from vocalisms and verbalisms to simple acts of doing it now, to do the things that are necessary. A few words, well spoken, will take care of the situation. We have too much to say because by doing it that way, we can conceal so little that we know. And if you talk loud and fast, people will suspect us of intelligence. When in reality, that is the proof that we are not thinking. And words become the basis of the release of thoughts. But only a thinker can have words to say that are worth anything. So the individual must grow up inside of himself before his words are important. We have had in the course of time a great many people come in asking help and so on. And in many cases, the problem is simplified to one very pointed point. Namely, that people have taken advice from other people, and these other people didn't know what they were talking about. And yet they had the sense of authority, the power of authority, and perhaps the legal power of authority. But they were wrong. Trying to follow them, people got into further trouble. Actually, freedom under a democratic system is, as I said before, the right to be right. It is the possibility of the individual having the right and privilege to do his own thinking. And in thinking, to prepare his own concept of life. And in preparing his own concept of life, gaining a point of view which enriches his words. If he knows what he's talking about, his words are important. If he doesn't, no matter how pretty they are, he's getting nowhere. So the individual to use words properly must also put himself in order. He must do the things that are necessary to prove to himself first and later to others that the advice that he gives is founded upon fact, not upon hearsay, that he is reporting things known to be true and not things that have been passed from one person to another as hearsay. We are now in the midst of preparation for another election. It's coming in the next few months, and it's part of a process. Now, the process isn't wrong. No system of government is really wrong if it is honestly administered. None is any good if it is dishonestly administered. And somewhere between the honesty and the dishonesty, there is another little level called ignorance. Nobody knows what the problem is or how to solve it. But we can get a good idea from this, imagining the votive power of the country as one person, the one voter. And in that one person are all the conflicts, all the uncertainties, all the debates that we have in the great political structure. This one person has to believe something. He has to say something. He has to do something. And he is like ourselves. He is in the midst of a situation that he cannot solve simply by political process. He cannot get himself or his world out of trouble merely by electing another person. The only way we solve a problem is to go higher than the problem. We've got to do something better than we did it before. The problem of having to do it again is not important. We may do it 100 times and still be in the same trouble. Each time we search for solution, we must transcend some phase of previous ignorance. If we do not do this, we have no solution. So our problem as an individual or as a collective is to realize that problems are solved by growth and not by words. But growth in turn can become words, and when it does, it's scripture. When growth inspires words, those words are inspired. But unless words are inspired by growth, the individual is speaking better because he knows more, because he understands better. Unless these improvements are present, the words are useless. Therefore, we must, as individuals, try to solve the problems of our personal lives. We must try to grow. If we go to a psychiatrist for a consultation, we must be able to use the advice that we get constructively. If we find home problems that need solution, we have to solve them. Today, we don't bother to solve them. We walk out on them. And we walk out on them because today we are not studious. We are hoping and continually hope that we are living in the fun generation. And there's nothing very funny about what's happening. But we've got to learn to grow. And to grow, we've got to stop listening to other people and begin to do what in our own hearts and souls we know is right. If we keep on taking the advice of people who do not know either, we will all be in trouble. So we have been given a mouth to speak with. And the Greeks had a little phrase for it, that we have been given two ears so that we can hear. We have been given two eyes so that we can see. We have been given two nostrils so that we can breathe. But we've been only given one mouth because that is all we need to talk with. We do not need all. We need six ways of taking it in, but only one way of giving it out. And this is a very good rule for us to follow throughout life. But we do have to grow. And that's what I hope just definitely is the goal of a reorganization, regeneration, reformation of our entire system of government and citizenship. We've got to grow. We've got to outgrow waste. We've got to outgrow dishonesty. We've got to outgrow extravagance. These things we have to conquer. They cannot be legislated, because we can vote anywhere we want to and any way we want to, but we're going to do what we intended to do. Therefore, the intention must improve. We must definitely realize the value of becoming better. We can only bring peace to this world when we bring peace to ourselves. We cannot go through one divorce after another and expect the world to be beautiful. We break the rules of nature, and we write books on why we can break them. But the books don't do any good. The books in tying up open themselves. We cannot break the rules and survive. And not being able to do anything but obey and survive, we have to learn why obedience is a happier condition than disobedience. That if you really want to be in a fun generation, if you want to live a world of joy, we have to live right. That is the only thing in which the fun will never go bad. Otherwise, we will have fun for a day and misery for a lifetime. So we got to watch our reading matter. We never had as many books published on various subjects, particularly fiction, as we have today. In the old times, writing and publishing a book was a world event, and only the choicest things were issued. Today we are printing and publishing an infinite variety of material. Some of it is good. Some of it is passable. A lot of it is worthless. Out of all this mass of publishing and so forth, we gain our intellectual life. We gain our attitudes towards living, towards thinking, and towards all the personal factors of existence. We live by the examples of these books. We see them on television screens, we read them in books, and we see them in the neighborhood. A lot of these things, we definitely create our ethics. But what most of us do not notice when we see these things is the results. We don't see the misery that is the result of breaking rules. We hear an elaborate discussion of what to do, and when we try to do it, we're nowhere. We also have to realize that words can be treacherous. They can sound well and do nothing. And many, many products are sold on worthless words. We have them in written advertising, we have them in television announcements, and we have them on the printed page. These things may be very appetizing and inviting, but they're not true. We are constantly breaking the rules because we believe what we read or what someone says. And sometimes what someone says simply cannot be believed. And in religion and morality and ethics, this is especially true. We have to have the personal integrity of choice. The individual will have to read or listen do the right things if he wants to get himself put into proper shape. He will have to recognize the discipline he needs. He has to recognize that the only way in which he can get out of his own troubles is by correcting his own mistakes, and that anything that hurts others or hurts himself must be corrected. It cannot be allowed to be misunderstood indefinitely. And there is no way in which any individual, by a formula or a mantram or a symbol or some kind of a fetish, can change his disposition. He cannot escape the consequences of his actions except by correcting himself. We are gradually learning this, but it's the hard way. We can never be tyrannical and happy. We can never be fanatical and peaceful. Each thing has to be corrected in ourselves. And in so doing, we develop a new vocabulary. We begin to use words differently. We use words to support and defend principles. Not that they really need it, but it seems nice to do it. And we no longer will use words simply to support and sustain what we do wrong by quoting somebody else who did it wrong. These things have to change. There has to be a new order of life for us all. And this new order of life will mean a complete cleaning up of the dictionary and the vast accumulation of spoken and written word. The time has come when we'll have to use discrimination. We will have bad literature as long as we buy it. When we stop buying it, we won't have it. The same is true of our television entertainment. We'll have just what we deserve or what we demand. When we demand what is right, we will get it. It isn't a case merely that we are being exploited by somebody who should do better. The person who is exploiting us doesn't know any better either. The real thing is both the exploiter and the exploited, by growing up, are mutually corrective of each other. They've got to learn more. And we've got to be careful in taking the words that are spoken around us and make sure that the words are not propaganda for some type of falsehood. We've got to not expect something for nothing. We've got to stop looking for bargains. We've got to stop believing we can talk our way out of our problems and settle down to the quiet, substantial process of growing. There is nothing really that matures us like growing up. And growing up does not necessarily mean frustration. It means an individual capable of administering his own life with dignity. And in the same way, having a greater happiness and a greater security and a greater usefulness in the community. Cooperation here is a life of trade. Competition is its ruin. We are still trying to compete our way to world supremacy, and we'll probably ultimately keep on trying until we exhaust our resources and exhaust our capacities to make mistakes. We have a good capacity for that, however, and it will take a little while before we wear it out. But in the meantime, words can be used to express our convictions. The more people who use words constructively, idealistically, and progressively, the better civilization will be, because many people listen largely to others for advice, and if the advisor is right, everyone will benefit. If the advisor is wrong, no one will benefit. So in using words, we must remember the advice of Alice in Wonderland, where she says definitely, if you overwork words, you must pay them a little extra. We owe quite a little some of the words that we have actually failed to pay for over the period of ages. Let us learn to know that it costs money to talk, and that therefore it costs money to listen. Therefore, again, so that always, the more responsible we become, the more grateful we will become, and more indebted we will become to those who have helped us to grow. And we can settle down to a nice, quiet program of growing up. We will have a pleasant language with nice ABCs, and we'll have very much less to worry about. And the worry by itself won't do a bit of good. But if we watch and listen, we will find that the printed word will help in many ways. The written word, particularly by personal example, will be very beneficial. And the great words of the ages, the scriptures that we have all learned to love and admire, will have their full effect upon us. We will be gentle, quiet, happy people. And we will have a simple philosophy of life that we can share and communicate with dignity. Well, that's it, folks.